Linoleum Knife.
A podcast of the cinema, hosted by me, Alonzo Duraldi, and you, Dave Weitz.
Yep.
We both write film reviews for The Wrap.
Yep.
We are a married couple.
Yep.
That's really all you need to know.
Not feeling that theme song today.
Oh, I love our theme song.
Sorry, Blue.
Is it it's too happy for you?
You wrote a nice theme song.
You're not an up person today?
No, I'm not. To come back as a bug
or a rabbit. Do you want to talk about it?
Fine. It's a little too warm today. That's the for starters.
Yes.
Not interested in that.
Agreed.
Don't like it. I'm still reading this Sarno book. 100 Days of Sarno. Healing back pain, the mind-body connection. You know what? I'm on page 35.
You want worksheets.
And I don't see a worksheet. I don't see a checklist. I've skimmed the rest of the chapters. There's not one chapter that says what to do.
Well, I'm sure it's
here's what you do.
Clearly it's in there somewhere.
You know what I like? I like directions.
Yes.
I like a list. I like tasks. I like things that I'm supposed to do. I want to know what I am supposed to do. I could read 35 more pages of, you know, it's really just in your subconscious mind, and you really need to address that. Like, okay, sure, I will. Yes, I will. How? When? What? Tell me the things.
Maybe this is part of your mind-body connection that needs work.
Well, my mind is very connected to my body.
You're like Nurse Jackie in Rehab, who goes through it in like record time, like fills out all the worksheets and answers all the questions and does all of her like self inventory, like at blinding speed, just so she can get out.
I am no Nurse Jackie.
Okay.
She hid pills.
Yes, you are not.
I wish I had some pills right now so that I could have no back pain. It'd be faster than reading this book and trying to figure out what in the hell I'm supposed to do. On top of that,
yes,
I have a persistent dry cough. I've had it for 4 days. If I have COVID, I'm going to go on a rampage.
You haven't given whatever you've got to me, if that makes you feel any better. It could just be a dry cough. It could just be that you're not drinking enough water. I don't know.
If you are listening to this podcast and you refuse to be vaccinated, beat it. You're not my friend. How about that?
You don't get this show.
Yeah, you don't get to have this show. I hope all the people in my family who refuse to be vaccinated are accidentally listening to this podcast somehow right now. Because I got something to tell you all, too. You're dumb. It's your fault. This is why this is happening. This is your fault. This is why I have a cough. It's your fault.
Science.
I don't know why I have a cough.
No, you don't.
But everything else is your fault.
Maybe your throat is a dusty old ghost town.
It will, yeah.
Where tumbleweeds roll through.
Yeah.
With varmints.
Here we are with the podcast to keep your spirits up. To comfort you and make you happy. Everybody ready? Let's go. Cinema. Art movies great.
Here to bring you all the joy.
Art movies cool and great. They sure are. When does the pizza float into my mouth at the end of this recording?
It's going to be okay, Dave.
You don't know that.
I have to think it's going to be okay.
All right. What if we did actually talk about movies?
Why not?
We're apparently film critics.
Here's the thing that actually does make me feel a little better when it gets a little warm the way it does today.
Yeah.
Imagine being like those people in the 19th century who had to wear like suits all the time, even if they were lightweight seersucker, they were still wearing suits.
Yeah, I see old photos.
You know, think
from the turn of the 20th century, and everyone's all bound up in corsets and
think about
vests.
Think about all the Spanish people in Zama who like are in the tropics wearing woolens.
Yeah. What? I mean, it blows my mind, yeah. Really. We just watched Oklahoma.
Right.
This past Saturday night. We started watching Schmigadoon on Apple TV Plus for the purposes of Linoleum Knife Television.
LKTV.
LKTV, which is one of the Patreon shows. And over the course of 3 or 4 episodes of Schmigadoon, I've been like, I know what that's a reference to. Because I have seen The Music Man.
Right.
And I saw my high school drama department do Oklahoma.
The mind reels. Yes, and go on.
They also did The Sound of Music.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was great. Truly, transporting experiences.
Oh, the way Rodgers and Hammerstein intended, I'm sure.
But it, as I said earlier on one of the other shows, my history with film musicals is I've seen all the weirdo ones.
Yes.
And I'm in the deficit column on the big crowd pleasers that right. Everyone loves. I've never seen The King and I, never seen South Pacific, never seen Carousel, never seen State Fair, never seen Showboat. So many. So last Saturday night, we watched Oklahoma.
Yes.
And everyone in that movie, it's meant to be like summertime.
Right.
And everyone is like completely bound up in clothes.
Yeah.
Long petticoats and corsets and long sleeves. And
every inch of skin hats. Is covered. And then the women on top of it are squeezed into corsets.
Yeah. Big hats on top of their heads.
No wonder everybody's fainting all the time.
Yeah. All the guys are in suits and stuff too.
Yeah.
Like, I know what Oklahoma is like. It's hot. Like, it's hot like all of Texas.
And this was before they had air conditioning.
Right. And was out there dancing at the box social.
Yeah.
Making themselves even hotter.
I think of them when I get uncomfortable. And how, like, at least I'm wearing shorts.
Most days in the summer, I sit around here doing work in basically underpants.
Yeah.
That's it. You too.
I know.
Run that through your mind.
The whole thing about how everybody spent the pandemic in their sweatpants.
No, this is Los Angeles.
Yeah. In Southern California, we were just in our underwear.
We spent March, April, and May in the sweatpants.
Yeah.
That's when it's still cool. Cooler.
Right.
Anyway, boring topic of conversation. Oklahoma, that's my streaming DVD pick of the week.
Oh.
I just gave it to you. You know why? You should watch it. A, the songs are pretty great. They're kick-ass. They're classics of American musical theater. Also, that movie is horny, violent,
murdering,
obsessive, murderish. Name a thing that adults like to do. And it's in Oklahoma.
I will give one caveat about the version that is showing on Disney Plus. If you have my sensitive eyeballs, which Dave White does not.
Apparently I don't.
The version they're showing on Disney Plus is the Todd A.O. version.
70 millimeter. Explain what they did.
Okay. Yeah. So apparently this Todd A.O. process was still pretty new at the time. And they weren't entirely sure that it was going to work. And also, because Todd A.O. shoots at 30 frames a second as opposed to the normal 24 frames a second, you couldn't convert a Todd A.O. print into like a 35 millimeter print to go out to, you know, non 70 millimeter theaters. So they shot the whole movie twice. Once on the Todd A.O. camera, once on a 35 millimeter camera. So there are two entirely different versions of Oklahoma that are basically alternate takes involving the same cast. If you get the Blu-ray, apparently, you can see both versions.
Oh, cool.
If you watch the Disney Plus version, which you're recommending on streaming, it's the Todd A.O. version. And because it's 30 frames a second rather than 24 frames a second, it does that thing that a high frame rate does. If you went to see those Hobbit movies, if you went to see Billy Lynn's long halftime walk, if you've ever forgotten to turn the smoothing off on your television, everything's a little bright, a little clean, a little high def, like you're looking at B-roll as opposed to a movie. I found that occasionally distracting. It didn't get in the way of enjoying what's an exceptional film.
You are exaggerating so much.
I'm telling you what I saw. You didn't see any of
this. The motion smoothing comparison is flat out wrong. The crispiness is perhaps, I might give you that, mm-hmm. because it does look very bright and clean and digital. But 30 versus 24 is negligible for my eyeballs.
Well, I'm just saying, not everyone's necessarily going to notice it, but I did, and I, you know, I'm a four-eyed goon with not the greatest eyes in the world, so, you know.
You're not a goon.
I'm not, and believe me, it was not...
You do have four eyes, but you're not a goon.
It was not nearly as off-putting as either Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk or
right.
Gemini
Those
Man.
Movies are unwatchable.
Those were crazy. Those were like watching old Doctor Who's that were shot on videotape or whatever.
I walked out of Billy... whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
But... It's not that intense, but it is. I remember in the first 5 or 10 minutes, I was like, what's going on here? And I finally like went to Facebook and was like, what's happening here? And then somebody explained the Todd AO thing to me.
I remember walking out of Billy Lynn?
Yeah. Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Went to the concession stand.
Yeah, you walked out in the middle of the movie, never to return.
Went to the concession stand. Got myself some kind of...
Junior Mints?
Snack. Well, it was like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Junior Mints?
It might have been candy. I was talking to a concession dude, and I go, I'm just going to go sit over on that bench over there. Is that okay? He goes, oh. He goes, yeah, this happens every screening. I go, really? People are walking out like every screening? He goes, yeah.
Yeah, because after all the big hoo-ha about Billy Lynn being shot in like 120 frames per second or something insane like that,
yeah,
they wound up opening it in exactly 2 theaters in that format for 1 week.
The Cinerama Dome.
Cinerama Dome in Los Angeles.
Which was the one we went to.
Yeah, and some theater in New York, I forget which one.
Yeah.
And so that was it. And so you had to be a special kind of film nerd to be like, oh, I got to see this. Before it leaves town.
And you are very special.
I'm that kind.
Yeah. Hey, guess what?
What?
Guess what the best movie is this week that we're going to talk about?
I suspect it's one I have not seen.
It is. In fact, it came out in April. Mm. Now, Oklahoma came out in 1955.
There you go.
But this other one, this one right here that we're fixing to talk about, it came out in April. It premiered at Sundance 2020.
Okay.
It won, I don't have it in front of me, some kind of prize there, an international jury prize or something like that. Okay.
Oh, speaking of Sundance 2020.
Yes.
Next week, we should totally talk about Whirly Bird.
I don't know what that is.
It's a documentary about the pioneering news copter person who filmed the OJ chase.
Uh-huh.
And then a few years after that, transitioned.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'll watch that. All right, so anyway, this is possibly, don't quote me on it, the first film from Lesotho?
I don't know.
The country that is an independent country that sits within South Africa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. From a filmmaker, this is his, technically, it's his third narrative feature, but he disowns the one he made in 2007, his first movie, calling it bad cinema.
Oh.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia, it's Lesotho.
Lesotho.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now I know. And he's made two narrative features that he
disowns.
That he likes.
Oh, okay.
One that he disowned.
Gotcha.
And a documentary.
I see.
This is his latest one, made in 2019. Sundance 2020. American Theatrical Distribution 2021.
Gotcha.
The name of the movie is This Is Not a Burial, It's a Resurrection.
Okay.
The director, his name is Lamong Jeremiah Mosese. Mm-hmm. He was born in Lesotho. He's based in Berlin. And this film is playing in many, many virtual cinemas. So you can see it online still, even though it came out in April.
Gotcha.
Like Lumiere Music Hall here in Los Angeles is still showing it on their virtual option.
Cool.
Stars Mary Twala. If you don't know her, then you are not from South Africa. She was in Black is King last year.
Oh, okay.
She was in the Beyonce film Black is King.
Cool.
She was also in Serafina in the 90s. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
She died last year in 2020. She was 80. And this is one of her last films. And she plays a woman in a little village in Lesotho where her husband, she's a widow. Her husband is gone. She's also lost children. And now her son, who is a minor, has died.
M-I-N-E-R.
M-I-N-E-R, yes. So she's alone. And she wants to go. Every night she goes to bed in this dress that her husband gave her, wanting to pass away in this very beautiful dress.
Right.
She wakes up every morning. She's still alive. She makes plans for her funeral, telling everybody what she wants, who she wants to sing, not her, the other one. She knows what she wants.
Sure.
Yeah.
She's into the whole living will thing.
Admire that.
Yes.
Yeah. She tries to pay a local guy to dig a grave for her. Because she really wants this to happen.
Right.
He's like, I can't. She's like, I'll pay you double. He's like, no, it's a sin. She's like, we have an agreement. But here's the worst part. The village is scheduled to be flooded intentionally. They're going to let loose a dam. All these developers in the area are going to let loose a dam. They're going to relocate everybody in the village to another city, to the capital city. Mm-hmm. And they have all been given the option of digging up the graveyard to bring their deceased loved ones with them to be reinterred in the capital. And so Mary Twala's character, her name is Mantoa. Mantoa says, no. Like, everyone in my family is buried here. How am I going to get them? What am I supposed to do about this?
Right.
So she becomes increasingly defiant as the plans get closer and closer to happening. And the local priest is trying to talk everybody up. Mm-hmm. You know, into it, like, hey, we're all going to go, you know. But she's not having it. And her defiance is what forms the plot of the film. So much so that in the last, third, you see her doing the opposite of what a person would be doing much of the time if they were preparing to die. You know, like, I want to make myself right with God. I want to, you know, tie up all my loose ends. She becomes more and more spiritually defiant. Hmm. There's a scene And this is a spoiler, but it doesn't matter because the film is an entire entity.
Yeah.
There's a scene where she is sitting in the burned out rubble of her home. There's a fire in the middle of the movie. And she's sitting on the bed, sort of despondent. Now she has nothing. And there's a herd of sheep surround her. And you are meant to really think of the last scene from Ojos Ard Baltasar.
Yes, of course.
And there are other sort of film historical reference points visually here. There are nods to, you know, that. There are nods to Tarkovsky. I don't know enough about cinema from various African countries to know what might be being referenced here as well. Because honestly, Ousmane Sembene is the kind of the person I know.
Right.
Well,
and Mehdi Diop's uncle.
And yes. Yeah. And Mehdi Diop. So my experience with African cinema is limited.
Sure.
But I get all the European references.
Right. And you don't have to know.
No. Yeah. No, you don't have to, but you know, if you're a better film critic than I am, you'll know.
That's fair.
You'll know what you're looking at. So what happens here is, like I said, she becomes more defiant about the circumstances that not only she is in, but the entire village is in. Because they've already been colonized once.
Right.
And now they're being pushed along again by
corporate interests.
By the colonization of corporations.
Yeah.
And developers and people who are interested in what they claim is progress. To the point where, in one moment, she turns to the priest and she says, "All of this means nothing. Our displacement means nothing. My husband's death, my son's death, my children's death, my grandchildren's death, nothing. Your wife, her death meant nothing." And she's saying this to the priest.
Whoa.
Yeah, she's... So it's sort of an anti-inspirational film. But what you see going on among the people in the village is they're watching her.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying attention to her. She's bringing them together. And the title tells you exactly what the film is about.
Right.
And I love it, and it's great, and it's gorgeously shot. Pedro Costa has something to answer for some of the compositions going on in this film. The Portuguese filmmaker whose film Vitalina Varela was my very favorite movie last year. If you can get yourself to an internet and watch This Is Not a Burial, It's a Resurrection, I strongly recommend it. Even when there are sort of some heavy-handed symbolisms going on, the performance from Mary Twala is... I will remember it. I will remember what she's doing in this movie.
Okay.
I would love it if you watched it sometime.
Okay.
Just so you could... you know, do a little boat rocking at the LAFCA voting meeting.
I knew that's where you were going with this. I already come in every year with my share of things that not enough people are voting for, so...
Yes, but you don't obey me enough of the time.
Well, this is why we periodically have a thing called Make Me, because we both come to each other like, "Oh, you need to see this," and the other one's always like, "Yes. How many years did it take me to get you to finally watch Hell's a Poppin'?"
But you know what?
What?
When I did, you were right.
Thank you.
So when you finally watch this, you'll know that I was right.
I don't doubt it. In the meantime, I have to spend time with important cinema like Jungle Cruise.
Hey, now. You know what I love? I like Emily Blunt.
I adore Emily Blunt.
She pops right off the screen.
Mm-hmm.
She is so... She has movie star stuff.
Yes.
And it's low key because she's just really charming and charismatic. Like, she's not running you over. She's just enveloping you into her Emily Bluntitude.
She's one of the few actresses of this generation that could step into a role like Mary Poppins and not have you think, what are you even doing?
Right. Right. No, she's the only reason you want to watch that Mary Poppins movie.
Yeah. Speaking of movie, Hills I Died On at LAFCA meetings. I really, really, really thought that she deserved to be Best Supporting Actress for Into the Woods.
Uh-huh.
To no avail. But anyway. Yeah. No, I think she's terrific. She is not, however, superwoman enough to rescue this garbage movie.
That's a fact.
And I am not saying this is a garbage movie because it's based on a theme park attraction, because,
you know, that's part of it.
Oh, well, but, you know, I think we have learned that good movies can be based on dopey things.
That is correct. I'm not saying that it was an automatic given that this would be puke.
But the fact that it's based on a theme park, right, isn't helping.
Not helping, no.
Especially because Dwayne Johnson, whom I also generally like,
uh-huh,
but when it comes to doing the cornball one-liners for which the ride is famous, maybe not quite his wheelhouse, because those moments land with a thud, as do any time where he and Emily Blunt are supposed to be having chemistry. Mm. It's one of those things where you just never know who's going to have it and who isn't. And so you have these two big movie stars who are very charming and charismatic and larger than life and have that thing that the camera likes and all that stuff individually. And then you put them together and it's a fizzle. This movie just, I'm stunned at the... that it's getting mixed reviews even. I couldn't believe...
From the director of Orphan. That should mean something great.
Joe Michelet-Syrah has directed all of my favorite trashy post-Taken Liam Neeson movies.
Yeah.
He did Nonstop.
Yep.
He did Unknown.
Yep.
He did The Commuter. I am down for his brand of genre shamelessness.
Yes.
And I'm not getting it here.
Well, you know what? Sometimes you get a big paycheck from a big Walt Disney theme park ride, and
all the personality gets stripped
and you walk in thinking, I can get my way.
Yeah.
I can do this.
I can put some flavor on this.
And he does some. Mm. I'm not as upset about the beginning of this movie as you are.
The part because, in London is okay.
Yeah.
When there's it's very like beginning of a Raiders movie.
Yeah. But then, you know, then come the Pirates of the Caribbean out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I don't need any more CGI snakes on people's heads. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not...
The fake snakes in this movie are nearly as bad as the fake snakes in Snake Eyes were.
Yeah.
I don't need a ghost.
Sea snake guy.
I don't need a ghost made of bees in a Jungle Cruise movie. Like, that just, it just felt like it's not pirates enough. It needs to be more pirates because that made money one time.
Right. I am upset by just the lead weight of it all, and the grabbing at things that have made films from Walt Disney Corporation successfully. Successful at the box office in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Give someone a chance to make something. Give somebody a chance to take your theme park ride movie and make it fresh and exciting and old fashioned and, you know, like an old adventure movie with Errol Flynn. You know what I mean?
Well,
and I sound like a 100-year-old person saying this, but it's true.
No, they're clearly going for. I mean, it's funny. They're going for, I would say, like Raiders and The Mummy, both of which are movies that exist to be pastiches of old Errol Flynn movies and old, right, like 1930s adventures.
Yeah.
And so it's the copy of the copy of the copy at this point. And, you know, it's just, it's so afraid of any moment of silence. This is like the loudest, clangiest, yeah, movie. You know, and you're right. Pirates, when it came out, nobody necessarily thought it was going to be that big of a hit. And Johnny Depp had to fight for this weird Johnny Sparrow thing that he was doing. In
Jack
that
Sparrow.
Jack Sparrow, thank you. That everybody was like, what are you doing? Keith, what? In, yeah, a Disney movie?
Right.
You know, and then that wound up being like, everybody loved it, and then we all copied it. And it's like, if they had this, that level of like, let's try some stuff. But now that Pirates has proven that you can turn one of these things into something really successful globally and a series and blah, 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 the creativity goes out the window. And what you're left with is like Jesse Plemons giving an embarrassingly dopey performance as the German villain. I'm glad he and Paul Giamatti are getting paid for this, because,
right,
they're both just sort of hamming it up. You have, you know, I'm sure they're patting themselves on the back for giving us a gay character in this movie.
All right, hey, let's talk about the gay.
Yeah, let's unpack him. So the whole movie, Emily Blunt has been traveling with her brother, played by Jack Whitehall, who was the terrible stand-up comedian in the terrible Mother's Day.
Okay.
And the whole joke is that she's the smart one, she's the adventurous one, she's the Indiana Jones,
right,
because it is 19 teens, you know, society. You know, he's the requisite man to be there, but even though she's, yeah, the one really doing everything.
Yeah.
The whole movie he is presented as like coddled British fop who like shows up with 20 pieces of luggage and,
yeah,
you know, evening wear and tennis whites and whatever else for this Jungle Cruise expedition. And then he gets like one scene where he explains to Dwayne Johnson about how, like, you know, he was supposed to get married a few times, but his interests lay elsewhere. And it's like, it's this nothing moment of a character that has not been established as anything but like a flimsy, you know, fey joke.
Yeah.
And on top of it, you just know that it's going to be dubbed out in whatever languages that don't want to deal with gay people like they,
yeah,
do with Onward.
Right. So here's the thing. This movie is set in what year? What, 1915 or something like that? I recently rewatched Morris. And you know what they did to gays in England back then?
Put them in jail.
You went to prison. You literally went to prison. And they discussed this in detail in Morris.
Yes.
So here's the thing. If you were a gay back then, here's who you wouldn't be talking to. Some giant brute who operates a boat in the jungle.
And keeps a CG Jaguar.
Yeah. The whole thing, like, you would be afraid for your life. You'd be like, oh, if I tell you this, will I live?
Yeah, will you throw me to the crocodiles?
To the end of the story? I don't know. Let's find out. And the Rock sits there and just nods his head like, oh, that's really, you know what? I really feel for you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, isn't the Rock nice for not murdering him?
What a guy.
The Rock sure was great in 1915 with the gays.
Oof.
Stupid. All right. Let's back away from the stinky of this.
Okay.
Let's talk about Matt Damon.
Oh. Speaking of.
Oh, God. Am I wrong for thinking this is the most hilarious thing in the world?
I, It depends on your approach. Because, okay, for those who don't know,
we're fixing to talk about the movie Stillwater. I mean Alonzo, because I didn't see it.
Yeah.
He's going to tell you everything.
But first, we have to dig into the Matt Damon news of the weekend, where he tells an interviewer that he recently, like 4 months ago, stopped saying the F slur for gays.
Yeah.
Because his 12-year-old daughter, like, wrote him an essay about why he should.
About why it's bad.
Yeah.
First of all, give that kid a bigger allowance.
Indeed.
And secondly, Matt Damon, why are you so regularly dumb?
It's amazing.
Because this is not the first time.
No.
That he has been like, oh, am I saying the wrong thing to someone who isn't straight and white and male?
Yes.
I guess I am.
And the thing about it is I've already seen he got very much dragged about it all over Twitter. And I'm already seeing the response, even from other gays, of like, people are allowed to evolve and people should be able to learn. And if we give them a hard time about this, then no one's going to feel that they can change.
We have to give him a hard time forever.
Well,
not in an angry way, but in a pat his head, aren't you an idiot kind of way.
Because
he's an idiot.
Because here's the thing. It's like, yes, fine. People are certainly allowed to change. But to tell this story to a reporter who didn't ask, like somehow he decided to bring this up.
Yeah. Isn't this a funny story?
Do you not understand what you're saying about yourself when you say, oh, yes, 4 months ago in the year of our Lord 2021.
I would still make jokes with this word.
I stopped saying the F word because my daughter convinced me.
Because he's not anti-gay. He's just, he thinks words like that are funny in jokes. And so he can, he thinks that, you know, because he doesn't say it in a joking way anymore, that makes the story, relatable.
Like, what do you think is going to be the result when you tell somebody that, oh, yes, 4 months ago, I was turned on to the notion that this might be a thing and I don't say anymore.
As we were talking about DaBaby this weekend on Linoleum Nights, which is
another
Patreon show. And as I said then, and I say now, it's all the same to me. You can't offend me. I'm 57 years old. I've heard every terrible thing that a genuine homophobe can say to me. To my face, about me to other people, about us as a group of people, whatever. All I come away from these incidents thinking is, well, there goes another dummy.
Yeah, my takeaway isn't like,
you can't hurt my feelings. Yeah. I don't have any left.
My takeaway isn't how dare you, Matt Damon. My takeaway is like, how clueless do you have to be to tell this story and think that you come out of this story as anything but a complete moron? How thick is your white, rich movie star bubble that like no one... It never occurs to you that maybe I don't tell a journalist that this just happened in my life and was a major sea change for me.
Stillwater.
Yeah, Stillwater.
I didn't see it. And maybe I will eventually, I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag. So, Matt Damon...
What's it about?
Matt Damon gives
Is it good?
Matt Damon gives a genuinely good performance.
Okay.
As, again, someone from Oklahoma...
From
Stillwater, Oklahoma, where OSU is, named Bill. He kind of works from job to job doing like construction and cleanup after tornadoes and stuff. He's trying to get back into working for oil rigs, but he has dealt with addiction problems in the past, but is staying sober. We see him visiting his former mother-in-law, to whom he's obviously very close. And it turns out the former mother-in-law really wound up raising his daughter, Abigail Breslin, because both he and the mother were, messes. And then he packs a bag and suddenly he's in France. We're like, whoa, what? Huh? What's going on?
Yeah.
He's in Marseille. His daughter is in prison there.
Yes.
When she was an exchange student, she was convicted of the murder of her roommate, who was a Muslim woman with whom she was romantically involved.
Uh-huh.
And he has been very diligently, periodically going to visit her and helping her out with doing her laundry, bringing her stuff, all that kind of thing.
Right.
So he comes to visit. She gives him a letter and says, look, don't read this. Just please give it to my lawyer. But he, of course, has somebody translate it for him. It basically boils down to a guy at the university was at a party, and this woman was saying that she met a guy who claimed that he had committed the murder and gotten away with it.
Uh-huh.
And so she wanted to see, wants the lawyer to see if she can reopen the case and track this guy down and find out what's going on. Well, of course, Matt Damon gets involved and just kind of like upends everything and is a general sort of bull in the china shop and makes things worse.
Uh-huh.
In the meantime, he starts this relationship with the woman who translated the letter for him, who's a local actress, who has a young daughter. She's a single mom. And he winds up moving in with them, you know, sort of platonically just as a tenant, but he and the actress wind up sort of like having a relationship. And then things happen regarding the case.
Okay.
And the thing is, all the stuff with Matt Damon and the actress, who's played by Camille Cotin, who's on Call My Agent.
Uh-huh.
Is really good, and his scenes with her are great. His scenes with the little girl who plays her daughter, a young actress named Lilou Siovaud, are lovely. But then once it gets into all the stuff about the murder and who might have done it and him trying to investigate, it all feels kind of clumsy. And like, what it boils down to is the idea of like Matt Damon's character being a metaphor for America when it comes to sensitive foreign policy issues, and we go blundering in and making things worse than they were before.
Right.
But that's, you can only take a metaphor like that so far. And this is coming from Tom McCarthy, whose last film was Spotlight, which was all about investigating.
Yeah.
And made that really interesting and really kind of like let you follow through the shoe leather involved and like knocking on doors and going through archives and tracking down that kind of stuff. But here the murder stuff is just feels weirdly tacked on, and then it goes into these weird sort of kind of twisty directions by the end, and it's just sort of like, could we just hang out more with the actress and the daughter, because that's what this movie has going for it. It's unwieldy, but there are things in it that work.
So, like, when it finally hits
cable,
HBO Max,
yeah,
TNT with lots of commercials.
Yes, watch it on Up TV when they've taken out all the bad swears.
Well, you know, I have very, I'm against swears.
Yes,
I don't like. There's no cussing, no fussing, no back-talking.
Yeah, this is, I have to say, it feels like a bit of a letdown, given that McCarthy, you know, his last movie was so great. Although the one before that one was even worse than this one. So, I guess he's that kind of filmmaker. Actually, you know what, there was one in the middle that I haven't seen that was on, that he made for Disney Plus called, like, Henry Danger or something, that I've heard is actually an okay kids movie, but
okay.
Didn't see it. You know, this is the movie that Amanda Knox is mad about.
Yes.
Because she feels like they're exploiting her life story.
Well, I mean... Yeah,
and they are.
Ripped from the headlines, you know.
But that's like... I mean, Hollywood's done that as long as there's been a Hollywood.
Correct.
Like, well, we changed all the names and, you know, but you watch it and you know exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, like, you know.
Yeah.
Take it up with Judy Garland, you know.
Right. So, another film that came out a while back that you saw early and I saw recently... is the latest from Francois Ozon.
Yes.
Called Summer of 85.
Yes.
It is set in a seaside resort town in France, mm-hmm. in the summer of 1985. And two gay teenage boys fall in love and have a 6 weeks... summer affair?
Something like that, although I don't know if we can call one of them gay. I think one of them is bisexual.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry. Yeah, he's bisexual. I forgot that part of the movie because they blipped right over it so quickly. So I blame the film for the bisexual erasure, not me for the bisexual forgettings.
I see. Yeah. Fine. This is based on a British YA novel. I don't know if you knew that.
Called Dance on My Grave?
Correct.
Yeah. The title of the book comes... the title of the book is a promise that the two young men make to each other. Mm. That if one of them dies, for whatever reason, the other will do a celebratory dance on his grave. Now... I don't know what that means in England or France, but here, if you say you're going to dance on someone's grave, it means you hate them. Am I wrong about this?
I mean, I think it's that way in England, too, because, okay. I mean, Elvis Costello's song Tramp the Dirt Down about
Margaret
Thatcher.
That's not a dance, though. That's just a stomping.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, well excuse me. Yeah. I don't know if it's a if you're two-stepping on someone's grave, if that changes the meaning of it.
What if you're river dancing?
I think it could go either way. I think if you ask someone to do it, then it could be considered celebratory. And it becomes a sort of morbidly comic
point. Because what he does is, at one point in the film, together they go on a date to a local cinema. And Footloose is playing.
Yes.
And you see the poster in the back, in the background. And so when it comes time to do the actual dance on the grave, oh yeah, one of them dies, by the way. Oops. But you knew that was coming.
They tell you at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, it's within the first 30 seconds of the movie, you know that one of them is dead. When he does the dance on the grave, it's basically the Kevin Bacon Footloose dance in the barn.
Yeah.
It's just flopping all over the place.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm sorry, what are you doing right now?
They should have played that, you could never, 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 never.
What did you think about this?
I liked it.
Explain yourself.
Okay.
I have not bad feelings about this film, but
go do
some talking.
Like Tom McCarthy, Ozone can run hot and cold. There's some of his movies that I think don't work. But I like when he is dealing... This movie feels, in a lot of ways, like... Not exactly... I don't want to say a greatest hits in a bad way, but it's definitely in his wheelhouse. You know, obsessive young love, the beach.
Right.
You know, a lot of recurring sort of themes and tropes and character ideas and whatnot. It felt like he got the period detail right, you know... The songs in the movie are from 85 or earlier.
Ish,
there's typewriters. You know, the jeans looked right.
The jeans look right. Yep.
I liked the fact that what starts out as this sort of like, you know, cute boy teen romance becomes this weirdly dark comedy about like death and the mechanics of the post-mortem of how we handle dead bodies and who is allowed access to them, and this is not a necrophile movie if I'm making it sound that way, but just it took me down paths I was not expecting to go down. I like how the way the people in the movie treat the one guy, like at first very welcomingly and then are completely mad at him, like, you know, the mother played by Valeria Bruni Tedeschi, who's an Ozone regular. You know, I like the look of it. It's very, it has a real sort of Eric Romer summertime movie
sure
feel, you know, which I like that sort of shout out.
Right.
You know, Melville Poupeau is in it. I thought it was, it's a movie that kind of captures like this really intensely passionate sexual relationship, like the good parts of it and the, I'm crazy now because of this parts of it.
Yeah.
You know?
I was initially put off by the sequences involving antics. as it
I thought you loved antics.
As it moved on. Because I thought, I'm sorry, what are you dumb kids doing? Why are you behaving this way?
They're 17.
Absurd. And then after I got out of the movie, I was like, oh, wait, you're a teenager.
Yeah.
And everything is the biggest deal in the world.
Yes.
And if your boyfriend dies when you're 16,
yeah,
you're going to go off and make a lot of really extreme grand gestures.
Yes.
Even if they don't make any sense.
Exactly.
And it's not just the dancing on the grave that we're talking about. There are some other things that he does that are...
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely, in the words of the Deck the Hallmark podcast, wait, what? Yeah.
But I think the movie gives you enough of the character and stuff to, even though they're nuts, you understand what they're, where it's coming from.
And having had a couple weeks to sort of process this, I realized that it is kind of in keeping with the original version of Endless Love, in that that obsessive quality of teenage love that drives you to do a whole lot of things and feel a lot of different ways, and then you get over it.
Exactly. And then you look back and go, oh my God,
what was I thinking? Yeah. So, I don't hate it.
All right.
I've seen other Francois Ozon films that I think are really wonderful and are, you know, the top tier of his output.
I was just going to say, I would call this high middle tier.
This is low key minor teen summer romance.
It would be
he wanted to make one, so he did.
It would be a really good double feature with Romer's Tale of Summer.
Yeah, plus put this one on first.
Yes, fair enough.
Because Romer's Tale of Summer is really fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, here's another French one.
Oui.
I saw it. You did not.
Oh.
It's called Mandibles.
Yes, yes, you did.
Mandibles.
Mandibles.
It's from Quentin Dupieux.
I think it's Quentin.
I'm American.
Fine, Quentin Dupieux.
Quentin. He made that movie Rubber.
Yes.
About the tire.
The sentient killer tire.
The sentient murderous automobile tire. Murders?
I saw Reality at a film festival that had either Tim or Eric in it.
He made Deerskin, starring, what's his face from the artist?
Jean Dujardin.
Yeah, about a man who was obsessed with a fringed leather jacket.
Mm.
So, you know, Mr. Dupieux, he is he's an unusual filmmaker.
Mm.
He makes movies that are absurd little self-contained worlds. This one is about two dirtbags played by Gregoire Ludig and David Marseille, who are a French sketch comedy team.
Mm.
They they've had their own show in France. They are lunkheads who just want to hang out and do not much. And they don't care about the consequences of their actions, no matter if those actions harm other people or even harm themselves. As long as they can just keep their real chill friend times going, they're happy. The Gregoire Ludig, in particular, as the sort of tall, big oaf of the pair, he has... His performance in this film is punctuated with this sound. a lot. So they are given a job to go deliver a thing from person A to person B. And they can't even do an underground borderline criminal act efficiently. They wind up setting fire to a camper van. They wind up kidnapping someone. None of this is planned. They never think, oh, we're going to do this. It just happens.
Right.
And in the car, that is meant to be delivered to, the car they're meant to use to deliver the item, there is an enormous, and I mean size of a German Shepherd, housefly in the trunk. This is a puppet. A delightful puppet. A super wonderful puppet that seems to understand French.
All flies do, Dave. That's a thing that not many people know.
Along the way, they run into a young woman named Cecile. Her actress's name is India Hare. Mm. She's also in Call My Agent. Mm. And she mistakes the big, tall, oafish one, Manu, that's his name. She mistakes him for a friend she knew back in high school. She thinks this is him. Mm. She says, hey, come to our summer house and hang out in our pool and be with all my friends and it'll be chill. So here we go. We're in another French summer house movie. And in my review at the Wrap, I reference all these other, you know, summer house movies.
Right. La Collectionneuse.
Yeah. And I say, Mandibles takes this French film tradition and farts all over it. You are watching these people spin out of control, and really terrible things begin to happen because of them and sort of because of the fly, but the fly becomes sort of an afterthought. They are, in real life, these are sociopaths.
Right.
But in the context of this film, they're just Beavis and Butthead making crimes happen.
Mm-hmm.
Other creatures die in the process. One of the people in the summer house is Adele Exarchopoulos.
Right.
She was the young blonde woman in Blue is the Warmest Color.
Mm.
And she plays a young, she plays a chef.
Okay.
Who has, as the result of a skiing accident, has neurological damage that makes her scream every word she says. She shouts every line of dialogue that she has. And the more she goes on, the more you realize that she's doing Madeline Kahn in What's Up, Doc?
Oh, my.
Because the more people tell her, stop yelling, she's like, I can't do it into the microphone, but I'm not yelling. I'm not upset. But you see her eyes getting more and more actually upset, like she's spinning out of control, too. You don't know where this film is going. I'll just tell you that.
I was going to say, that old saw.
Finally, well, I won't tell you what happens. There's no moral here.
No one learns anything.
You know, life is easier if you don't think about anything. If you wreak havoc everywhere you go, and it's all in your rearview mirror, and you're smiling and singing along to some song on the radio while it happens, I guess you're having a good life, like these two guys in this movie, and their fly that they are trying to train to do crimes for them. What I'm saying is I love this film.
Okay.
It is wrong-headed and weird, just like every other Quentin. Say it again in French.
Dupieux.
No, say his first name.
Quentin.
Okay. Dupieux film. You might not be into his kind of filmmaking. I really am. And I like these sociopaths and these screaming people and the fly puppet.
It sounds fun.
I'm into it.
I do want to see this one.
So we're going to very briefly discuss The Green Knight. Here's what happened. You saw the press screening.
Yeah.
I was all ready to go buy a ticket at a theater this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then two things happened. I started coughing. This dry, persistent cough. Perhaps you heard me mention it at the beginning of the episode. Mm. And then all this news about the Delta variant made you and me come to a decision. We're self-imposing lockdown part two for ourselves.
Yeah, for the moment.
For the moment. Like, taking it day by day, week by week. I would love to see the cases in Los Angeles go down.
Yes.
I would like to not go out and interact with anyone, particularly at a movie theater right now. Now, I've been going to movie theaters, but I've been going to, you know...
Alan Delon restorations.
Le Cercle Rouge with you, you know? I like, that's not...
La Piscine.
Yeah. There's been four other people in the theater. I'm waiting to see Green Knight until it is streaming. Or, again, until...
The numbers improve.
Until the numbers improve. Because when they tell you things on CNN like, look, most people who are vaccinated, the overwhelming majority of people who are vaccinated, aren't going to go into the hospital or die. And what that sentence really means is, a few of you will. I have bad luck, and so I just would really rather not...
tempt fate.
Yeah, exactly. So we're staying home.
All right.
You saw The Green Knight.
I did.
Talk about it very briefly. Everyone loves it except you.
Yes.
And I don't want you to tell me too much about it because I want it to be fresh for me. I haven't read a single review. All I know is that everyone likes this movie.
Maybe I shouldn't talk about it. We can just tell listeners if they're dying to know what I thought, they can go listen to Breakfast All Day where we discussed it.
Oh, you discuss it in detail on Breakfast All Day?
Yeah.
And are you going to do the same thing for Maximum Film?
We are.
Oh, well, then listen, y'all.
We'll wait until Dave.
Alonzo does these two other podcasts. One is called Maximum Film. It's on the Maximum Fun Network. Mm-hmm. And he also does Breakfast All Day, which is an independent podcast Christy Lemire and Matt Ashety and Ben Mankiewicz annually on YouTube. If you want to know what he thinks about this movie, if you've already seen it, or you don't think you're going to see it, and you want to know, please go there.
Yeah.
And then when I finally get around to being able to see it...
You and I can have a conversation.
You and I will have this little chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my streaming pick, I just discovered that The Book of Henry is on Netflix. And it's so terrible. And so... It's one of those bad movies that is so laden with good intentions, and you don't know exactly where it all went south, but boy, the results just don't work at all.
Right.
And from a plotting standpoint, from a performance standpoint, from a writing standpoint, it is one of those once every few years fiascos that just stand apart from your run-of-the-mill flop. So if you've never seen The Book of Henry, buckle up. It is banana town.
Yeah, it is. It's, I don't know. There's so much in it that's so wrong and bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I... How do I even feel about it anymore?
I mean, the only thing that keeps it from being like a midnight staple is that they are handling serious subjects really, really ineptly.
Really, really ugly, serious subjects.
Yeah.
Very ineptly, yes. Hey, we got some letters.
Oh, let's have them.
4-star Jennifer is back.
No.
Hey, guys. I took a break from podcasts during the pandemic, as if it's not still going on. Thanks to people who truly annoy me, and it was yours I missed the most.
Oh.
I'm so glad to hear you two lovely husbands are still going strong. Also, I agree with Dave about the endless Marvel DC parade. When I voiced the same sentiments to an online group I'm in, the responses were both vociferous and argumentative. When I pointed out that this is fantasy only, I was further lambasted for being a killjoy. Yeesh. Are Dave and I the only dissenters? Yes. Just you and me, Jennifer.
Everyone else is lockstep.
We're the real champions. Listen, as I said when we talked about Black Widow, I enjoy these films while I'm watching it, but I have fatigue.
Yeah.
I have fatigue about these films. I have more fatigue for the DC movies because I don't think most of them are very good.
I think you'll like the Suicide Squad.
I enjoy the Marvel films far more than I enjoy the, you know, stone-faced DC films. And you're telling me that the
Suicide
T-H-E-E Suicide Squad.
No, just one E. I know you'd like it to be the Megan the Suicide Squad, but no, the Suicide Squad.
Not just Megan the Stallion, but
the head coats.
The Hypnotics and the head coats and, you know, the head coatees. That was the lady, the head coats.
I never knew that was the thing.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy the Suicide Squad. And it's like, I always quote this LA Times saying from ages ago, a one crop economy caused the potato famine. I think.
Yes.
Studios spending so much time and money and energy on one kind of movie is not a good thing.
So, Jennifer, you and I are. Obviously, we're correct. We're right.
Or, like Martin Scorsese, you think of them as audiovisual entertainments.
They are audiovisual entertainments. Corbin says, when you have to do a double take because you read Old Snake Eyes and think, huh, is this a food item? Nope, main feed, two different movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is another Patreon show.
Here comes Old Snake Eyes.
Old Snake Eyes is back.
Walking down the street, snapping his fingers. Julia says, the French graphic novel that inspires Old is super dark and apocalyptic. I wonder if it would compensate for what Dave didn't like about the movie. But really, it's not a fun read at all.
Yeah, I heard it is a one bummer.
Great. I love bummers. That's why I watched Oklahoma.
All right. So as we mentioned a few times on this program, we have a Patreon and we have Patreon shows. LKTV.
Yep.
Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Yep.
Linoleum Nights.
Yep.
We have a monthly club meeting get together where we all watch a movie streaming and talk about it on Discord.
Correct.
And for August,
we're taking a poll.
We're letting the club members pick. So if you're at the $12 or above level,
well, they're getting to pick from three choices.
Well, yeah, we're not
and vote.
We didn't completely throw the doors open. We're not crazy. No, we gave them the choice of
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
The Net.
The Net, when Sandra Bullock meets the floppy disk.
Yes. And Midnight Run.
Which I've never seen.
I think you would enjoy it.
I'm going to have to watch it. If they choose Midnight Run, I have to watch it before we watch it.
Really?
Yeah, because I can't watch a film for the first time at an LK Club meeting.
I've done it. It's
not
ideal, necessarily.
I've done it myself, and I don't like it.
Okay,
because
fine.
I need to be able to have engaged conversation
via Discord
with the subscribers.
If they pick The Net, I will be watching The Net for the first time
during the club meeting. No. It's fine.
Anyway, all this and more, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check that out. This week's podcast, since I've been asked to take these one at a time, have I talked about the comics canon yet? In specific?
No.
Okay, so my very good friend of many years, Kurt Holman, and his co-host Kevin Moreau, every week on the Comics Canon, explore a famous, well-known, acclaimed, or important piece of graphic storytelling and analyze it, talk about what happens, what it meant then, what it means now, and does it belong in the pantheon known as the Comics Canon. I've been on a couple times. I've talked about Carl Barks's Uncle Scrooge adventures. We talked about Justice League International. I will be on a forthcoming episode to discuss What If, which Disney has turned into, or Marvel has turned into, a new upcoming Disney Plus animated series. So it's always interesting conversation. I find it, if they're talking about comics that I've read, I find out things I didn't know. If they're talking about comics that I haven't read, they give me an idea of what they're all about. And in some cases, I feel compelled to go check them out. But interesting stuff. So give them a listen, The Comics Canon.
You know what I just remembered?
What?
We have NyQuil.
Oh.
Oh, I'm going down at 7 o'clock.
Okay. Take that, cough. You've got a fun evening ahead of you.
You know what? There's nothing like a NyQuil evening.
Nights like these were meant for NyQuil.
It's like actually being dead for a whole night.
It's not a burial. It's a resurrection.
That's right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, hey, leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the air. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean, etc. You can follow us on social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And despite Dave being in a funky mood, thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music.
I really do like the theme song.
Go check his stuff out at Bandcamp, blue.bandcamp.com.
I mean, except for today. I hate it today.
Well, that's on you, though. All right. Not on him.
Okay.
Blue.bandcamp.com. He's got a new album coming out in August, which I'm super pumped about. And so you'll want to find out more about that and everything else that he has on offer. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Stay safe. This thing isn't really over yet.
Yeah.
And until next week.
Goodbye.